people with symptoms of the deadly virus are treated outdoors.
And that is posing a major challenge in India's battle with COVID. It's Wednesday, May 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. says it will share millions more COVID-19 vaccines with the world. COVID sets back the battle against tropical disease. The effort to fund Rohingya camps in Bangladesh needs help. The fear of Asian students studying in the United States. It is all on today's VOA Asia. In India, the healthcare crisis triggered by the ferocious second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic is shifting from the big cities to small towns and villages. Combating the spread in rural areas where two-thirds of the country lives, health experts say has emerged as India's new challenge. From Mumbai, Anjana Pasricha has this report.
Relatives try to help loved ones suffering from COVID-19 at a hospital in a small town in North India. In a village, people with symptoms of the deadly virus are treated outdoors because residents said they had no option of accessing health facilities.
When people go to a hospital, they hear that there are no beds, there is no treatment available, and there are no doctors or healthcare workers. When they go to private hospitals or doctors' clinics, they get just a prescription for medicines. Patients are helpless.
In villages, grieving families tell stories of how they are losing loved ones to the virus as the pandemic's second wave rages in rural India after slowing down in big cities such as New Delhi. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has sounded a grim warning.
This infection is now spreading to villages very rapidly. All governments of the country are trying everything to stop this. The awareness of people in the villages and the cooperation of the village governing bodies is just as important in controlling this spread.
The government says it will increase the number of hospital beds with oxygen support in rural districts, which usually have ill-equipped health centers. But the challenge is in meeting the demands. Even in big cities, modern hospitals, isolation and testing centers were overwhelmed and oxygen supplies ran short. Such facilities are sparse in rural areas.
You may have some in the semi-urban areas, but nothing close to what you're having in metros in terms of sophistication, both in infrastructure as well as in skills and capacity to be able to deal with the virus. I mean, even if you have oxygen concentrators and oxygen there, people should know how to use that. And unfortunately, capacity building has not happened to that extent.
Villages will also be hit hardest by a shortage of vaccines that has hobbled the country's inoculation drive. While older people can get a jab at health centers, India has mandated that adults under 45 must register on an app-based technology. But many rural residents do not have smartphones or internet access.
Imagine what will happen with people in rural areas who, as it is, do not have the full awareness of and benefit of knowing day-to-day changes in COVID protocols that we are being subjected to.
Health experts say a slow pace of inoculating the countryside, where two-thirds of the country lives, will make it harder to counter the fury of India's second wave. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
In addition, India is now facing a meteorological challenge as a cyclone on India's west coast has killed at least 19 people and damaged infrastructure and agriculture, while heavy rains continue to lash some regions on Tuesday. Reuters' Flora Bradley-Watson has more.
A powerful cyclone has left a trail of destruction along the northwestern coast of India. Packing winds of 130 miles per hour, Cyclone Tauktae made landfall late on Monday, uprooting trees and electricity lines. Authorities are now concerned about the steady supply of oxygen to hospitals overwhelmed by COVID-19. The storm has hampered India's fight against the disease. Ahead of Tauktae's arrival, hundreds of thousands of people had to be evacuated from coastal areas in the state of Gujarat. Vaccinations were suspended for 2 days, while hospitals awaited backup generators to keep power running. The cyclone weakened after it made landfall, but at least a dozen people have already died in the storm. The Indian Navy said it had rescued 146 people from one of two barges that were adrift near the Mumbai coastline. In Gujarat, no damages have been reported at the refineries and seaports that were expected to be in the storm's path. The country's biggest private port was able to open on Tuesday. The cyclone was the most powerful one to hit India in more than two decades.
That was Flora Bradley Watson reporting. We continue with VOA Asia. As vaccine demand drops at home, the Biden administration says it will share more COVID-19 vaccines with the world. Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The U.S. had already pledged to ship 60 million AstraZeneca doses overseas once federal regulators clear them for use. Now, President Biden says 20 million doses of the three vaccines that are approved will be shared for the first time.
We need to help fight the disease around the world to keep us safe here at home and to do the right thing of helping other people.
He's been under growing international pressure to share doses, even as fewer Americans seek the shots domestically. More than 123 million people here are now fully vaccinated. More than 157 million have received at least one dose. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The World Health Organization reports the COVID-19 pandemic has set back years of gains made in efforts to eliminate neglected tropical diseases, a diverse group of 20 illnesses that disproportionately affect impoverished communities in tropical areas. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Neglected tropical diseases affect 1.7 billion people globally. 40% are in Africa, a continent that encompasses most of the 10 high-burden countries in the world. Over the past decade, the World Health Organization reports great progress has been made in the treatment of many of these life-threatening and debilitating diseases. It notes 42 countries around the world have eliminated at least one disease. However, Mwelechele Malichela, director of WHO's Department of Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases, says she fears a lot of this good work could be undone because of the negative impact of COVID-19. She says the pandemic has caused disruptions and delays in NTD services. She says mass treatment campaigns, surveys of affected areas, and the transport and delivery of medicines have been interrupted.
All the efforts that have been done to control these neglected tropical diseases to bring about elimination in most, in some of the countries, will be reversed if the focus is not kept, a good focus on surveillance, a good focus on continued interventions in some of the countries which are nearing elimination.
WHO reports guinea worm disease is on the cusp of eradication, with only 27 human cases reported in six African countries last year. In 1986, about 3.5 million human cases occurred annually in 21 countries in Africa and Asia. WHO says yaws, a chronic skin infection, is a disease that can be eradicated in the Indian subcontinent. Malichela cites several other success stories.
In terms of elimination of trachoma, we have Morocco, we have Ghana, and more recently we have Gambia. We have the elimination of lymphatic filariasis in Togo and in Malawi. In Yemen, which is, you know, outside Africa in the Middle East, they have eliminated lymphatic filariasis under very difficult conditions, but they've managed to do it. And that's, you know, very impressive feat.
At the end of January, WHO formally launched a new roadmap aimed at driving progress toward a world free of NTDs by 2030. Health officials consider the roadmap a key piece in ensuring countries build back better after COVID-19 by focusing on resilience and strengthening health systems. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia continues. An appeal for nearly $1 billion to help Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh is more than a third funded. The head of the UN Refugee Agency said that Tuesday. Filippo Grande told a news conference in Geneva that donors had so far pledged $340 million for the 2021 program, meaning it's currently 36% funded.
In terms of the results of this morning's conference, remember, $943 million requested. there were $206 million in fresh contributions, but we should note that $134 million had already been contributed before this event, which means that up to now, $340 million, meaning 36% of this plan, have been funded.
Speaking at the same event, International Organization for Migration Director General Antonio Vitorino said he understands the fatigue of the host communities, but improving refugees' living conditions will also benefit them.
We understand a certain fatigue in the host communities, but we are determined to show that improving the living conditions of the refugees can represent also a positive contribution to the region of Cox's Bazar as a whole, to the benefit of the host communities themselves, and also to minimize the negative impacts, especially, as Filippo has mentioned, in terms of the inevitable environmental impact of the presence of such a large number of people living in very difficult circumstances.
Vitorino added that COVID outbreaks in the Rohingya camps have so far been successfully contained, although vaccines were urgently needed. The rate of anti-Asian hate crime has soared in the United States since the coronavirus pandemic started in early 2020. International students in the U.S. report isolated incidents. Kathleen Strzok has this report.
Most international students in the U.S. are students of color. Amid the pandemic, which started in China, anti-Asian hate crime has spiked 150% nationwide, according to police data. Since March 2020, Stop AAPI Hate, a group that monitors racism against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, says it received more than 6,000 reports of hate incidents. Columbia University student June Bake says he came to the U.S. in 2015 from South Korea because of the quality of education.
America offers the best universities, the most renowned ones, and I felt that like going to America, studying there, would open up new opportunities than I would have had if I were to study back in Korea.
While riding the subway last year, he heard a woman begin to shout. That's not unusual in New York City. But he realized it was directed at him.
I tried to not say anything, just look down, just mind my own business. But it got worse and worse. And it became more, it wasn't just any kind of verbal assault. It was, I realized that it was actually directed at me. And I decided to just get off at the next station.
Shootings in March near Atlanta, Georgia, left 8 people dead, including 6 Asian women. While the suspect said his motives were not racial, Asians in the U.S. said the incident has increased their fears.
It's really sad because I have to avoid going out in the dark. I have to avoid certain streets which are dark. I have to always be very cautious and very aware of my Asian identity.
All the students VOA talk with said they generally feel comfortable on campus and among America's diverse urban populations. They say the experience of living in a multicultural society has been a great lesson.
It's been an amazing journey, especially when I look back. I really got to see so many different cultures coming together and most importantly meet friends from different countries, different cultures, and get to know their stories. Really expanded my mind, and I appreciate this kind of freedom for me to explore the world.
But just having Asian features creates anxiety lately.
When I was watching the recent news, I definitely feel really sad to see those attacks happening, not only in New York City, but also in other cities as well. And I feel a little bit like unsafe when I'm in this kind of situation. I'm lucky because I've been receiving a lot of love and support.
While reports of hate crimes overall decreased 7% last year, likely because of lockdowns, reports of hate crimes against Asians rose nearly 150% in 16 of the largest U.S. cities, according to police data. Kathleen Strzok, VOA News, New York.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.